Good evening, and welcome to Bread and Roses on our first program of 2006. This is Crystal, your host for tonight, and our engineer is Chris. I wanted to have this first program of the year to be a talk radio format because I'm a fan of the morning KABU programming, and I'd really like to engage you as listeners and hear what you have to say. So right off the bat, I want to tell you the number to call is 503-231-8187. And about tonight's subject. Well, while reading my email, I found a very interesting piece of writing from Tom Hartman, and I believe it's excerpted from his book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight. The piece that I'm going to read is titled, 10 Steps to Restore Democracy to America, A Declaration of Rights for the 21st Century. So, I see the engineers on the phone, but I don't think it's a call. Not a call. Okay, so I'm gonna begin by reading the first of these 10 declarations of rights, and I'm hoping you'll call and well, listen and call in with your thoughts, pro or con, and I'll throw my comments in as well. So here we are. Step number one, human rights are for humans. Corporations are not persons. We must update the 14th Amendment to insert natural before the word persons, so corporations can no longer claim the right to lie, the right to hide their crimes, the right to buy politicians and influence elections, and the right to force themselves on communities that don't want them. Corporate charter laws should be amended on a state-by-state basis to reinstate the spirit of the Sherman Antitrust Act by, again, outlawing the ownership of one corporation by another, to limit the term of a corporation, to insert corporate code-like language requiring a corporation to place the needs of the community above its desire for profits, and, as Teddy Roosevelt was so strongly urging people, to ban corporations from political activity of any sort. Similarly, corporations are not nations and shouldn't stand on an equal footing with nations. The United States should withdraw support of treaties and agreements such as NAFTA, WTO, and support of the World Bank. Okay, so that's the number one on Tom Hartman's list to restore democracy. And it was really interesting. When I was looking at this, a friend coincidentally gave me something to read that focuses on that. And I'm going to read it. I'm not going to tell you who wrote it, and maybe one of you who are listening to this will know it. So this is what was said in the past. We may congratulate ourselves that this cruel war is nearing its end. It has cost a vast amount of treasure and blood. It has indeed been a trying hour for the Republic. But I see in the near future, excuse me, a crisis approaching that unnerves me and causes me to tremble for the safety of my country. As a result of the war, corporations have been enthroned and an era of corruption in high places will follow, and the money power of the country will endeavor to prolong its reign by working upon the prejudices of the people until all wealth is aggregated in a few hands and the republic is destroyed. I feel at this moment more anxiety for the safety of my country than ever before, even in the midst of war. God grant that my suspicions may prove groundless. Okay, so that's a quote from an historical figure, and anyone who knows the answer to that, I'd love to have them call in. Do we have anybody yet? Nobody yet, Chris. Okay, so, well, I'm going to go on to step number two of Tom Hartman's declaration. We own our government and our commons. But the United States is a constitutional, representative, democratic republic where our government is literally us. It was designed to work for us, be owned by us, exists solely by virtue of our ongoing approval and must answer to us. Government functions must be transparent, and that transparency must also apply to corporations hired by government, particularly any who handle our votes. The shared commons of our nation, including our air, water, transportation routes, airwaves and cable networks, communication system, military, police, prisons, fire services, healthcare infrastructure, and courts, must be held either by locally controlled nonprofit corporations or by government responsive to its citizens. Because our federal legislators represent us, any benefits, rights, and privileges they have voted for themselves must apply to all of us. Similarly, I'll just read another page. I think we've got another line, and then I think we've got someone waiting. Similarly, just as we manage, we must balance our budgets every year except when in crisis, so must our governments. Okay, I'll stop there. Justin, you're on the line. Welcome.
Hi, how you doing?
Pretty good, thanks. What have you got you'd like to share with us?
Oh, I just, is that Thomas Jefferson that said that?
Good idea, but nope, somebody else in the same business. Yep.
Oh, that's too bad. Well, he was a president, though. I know they said that, right?
Yep.
And was it Lincoln?
Yes, you're right. It was Lincoln.
All right, woo!
Good for you.
Yeah, I knew it was one of the two. I thought, well, maybe Jefferson, but then he's talking about the wars. So I thought, oh, it's probably Lincoln. So.
Yeah, you were right. That was right thinking. Yeah, and that long ago, it just amazed me to know that. Well, Justin, I think we've got someone else on the line, unless you have something else to add.
Nope. Have a great evening.
Okay, thanks. You too.
All right, bye-bye.
And, Chris, we have someone else. Margie, you've called in. Thanks very much and welcome.
Hi.
Hi.
I was going to say Lincoln as well.
Okay, great. You were right.
But I also wanted to ask, is it okay to mention actual corporations on the radio in a comment?
You know, I don't see why it wouldn't be. I know there's seven bad words we can't use.
Okay.
But I think if the bad word is the name of a corporation, it's all right to use it.
Well, my comment is that this Christmas, I got a gift from Walmart. Someone had bought it from Walmart because it had a little sticker on it. And they know that I really, really, I don't go there. And that's, to me, that's the worst, one of the worst corporations in the world.
Yeah, and that was kind of unfriendly of someone who knows you not to,
well,
to do that.
But I think it's not unfriendly. I think that there's a blind spot people have right now in terms of how, like, I just watched the Frontline show that was titled, Is Walmart Good for America?
Yes.
And it was amazing. And I wish that everyone would see it, especially retailers, to realize what we're up against, that they're actually guiding the global economic market.
So
by themselves.
So Walmart is setting this new low standard for other corporations to follow. Ooh.
Right. And so it's so important for us not to shop there because that's the only way for them to lose this stranglehold. And yet to get that information across even to someone who's well-educated seems so difficult. And so if anybody has any good ideas about how to do that, I'm really looking.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm glad you called in, and I hope some other people call in on this too. But I'm thinking that one good way is to start with the people that we know the best and talk about it and kind of work our way in our circle of friends or acquaintances or people at work, kind of work our way toward people we maybe don't know quite as well, but present it in an easy way that you don't shop at Walmart, although you're.
But it's a complicated concept.
Yeah.
To explain why they're not good, that it's not just. What the quote that you were reading about the power of corporations and what that fear, what Abraham Lincoln's fear was,
yes.
is exactly what's happening, of course, now.
Mm-hmm.
And there
so.
Is a prime example at the top, richest families. They own as much wealth as something like the combination of the 48 poorest countries in the world. It's staggering. So this is the kind of thing that it's so difficult to bring this out in a way that doesn't sound, you know what I'm saying?
Well, you know what I think you're saying is that that this horrendous thing is happening, and of course there are other corporations doing other things that are not in our best interest by far. But this is a particularly easier one maybe to talk to just folks like ourselves who do shop, but we don't have to and we choose not to shop at a place that exploits so many people. I mean, I have an in-law in Kansas who works for them, and it's not a subject that I can bring up with her very much because she it's someone that I do try to talk about how she's being exploited. And I know that for her and her situation, it feels like, you know, it's the only way she can make money
right
out there.
Yeah. That's right. Well, they're going into the same towns where they've wiped out the industry.
Yes.
And then they're bringing a store in, and the people have no choice but to go to work for them at their low wages, who used to be working for a company like Rubbermaid, for example, making, you know, twice as much with benefits.
Yes. Yeah, it's pretty disgusting. Well,
okay, let you go to someone else.
Okay, thanks so much for calling, though, and maybe we'll hear someone who's got some other ideas.
Good idea. Thanks.
Thanks. And Sylvia, you're up next.
Hi,
welcome.
I just finished reading.
Oops, I didn't tell you. What's your name? I got it wrong.
Silvio.
Say again?
Silvio.
Silvio, thank you. I misheard the first time. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm really glad you are having this discussion tonight, because I just finished reading last week Tom Hartman's book, Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight.
Oh, great.
And so it's an amazing book, and everybody should read it. There's another book, Barbara Marx Hubbard,
yes.
Conscious Evolution.
Yes, I know of that one.
Yeah, that's also a very important book. And there's others that, you know, that I'm reading. But these two are very important. But I remember back when I was about 30 years old, and my little brother was 20 years younger than I was. And so I was the coach of his soccer team. And one of the fathers of one of the boys on the team, he was kind of a really down and out person at that time, and I didn't understand what he was really saying, but now it just, you know, blows my mind when I think about it. But his family had a couple of haberdasheries that were started by his father or grandfather, and then these chains started coming in and put him out of business. Well, now this is what's happened all over the world.
Oh yes,
you know, these blood sucking people are just stealing everything and making everybody poor and desperate and, you know, taking away their dignity and on and on.
Yes, and we're getting, I'm hoping, as you say in your example, that as each generation comes to understand this more and more clearly, we'll be able to do what we have to do to get things changed. Thank you for calling
in. I'd just like to say one quick thing.
Sure, go
ahead. One of the things that Tom Hartman says is try not to shop at any store that has more than one, you know, division or more than one store. That way you keep everything local in one place.
Good idea, and to be on the watch too for the corporations which are slowly taking over our local ones. Like, I don't know, Myron Frank was a store from now it's not.
Fred Meyers.
Yeah, Fred Meyers another good one.
There's all kinds of them.
Okay, well, thanks a lot.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. And Ruth, do we have you waiting?
Yes, I'm here waiting.
Oh,
thank
hi.
You.
Yes, welcome.
For taking my call. I was thinking about the lady who said that she doesn't shop at certain stores because she doesn't approve of them, and how can she communicate with some of her friends and people. And one point that I've made to a few people who continue to shop or support or own stock in such places is I said, now, would you buy stolen goods off the back of a truck if you knew that that money was part of the whole drug scheme and that these goods were stolen? And they go, oh, no, of course not. I say, well, when you buy at a place like Walmart what you're buying is they've stolen lives. They've stolen the labor of the people who produce those goods.
Mm.
And if all they steal is a lower salary that's even minimum wage or just a little less, they've stolen their lives because the people who are the workers are not having a standard of living, which they have a right to since they are so obviously contributing to the wealth of the owners of these companies.
Yes.
That's kind of, I take it from there.
You know, I think, I thank you for calling. I think that's a very good idea. I like that analogy, and I can see how it fits very well, and I appreciate that call. Did you have any other points you wanted to make?
No, I think that you have so many callers and such a good program that that's all the points I wanted to make tonight, and thank you for taking my call.
Well, yes, thank you very much for calling in.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Chris, do we have someone? Nope. Okay, well, you know, I'll read another one of these 10 steps, and I'm glad to know that some people who are familiar with the last hours of ancient sunlight have called in to affirm that that's a pretty good book to read and kind of a blueprint for change. So let me see here. Number three, in a democratic republic, government must represent the will of the majority of the citizens while protecting the rights of the minorities. To make American government more democratic, we must join the rest of the world's modern democracies and institute either proportional representation or instant runoff voting systems at local, state, and federal levels. Similarly, human rights movements defending minorities and women against exploitation by corporate power structures or harm from paranoids, homophobes, and racists must be recognized, and the Equal Rights Amendment must be passed. Okay, well, if anyone agrees with that, I'd love to hear from you, and if anyone disagrees with that, I would respectfully like to hear from you also. So I think I'm going to go on to number four. A strong middle class is vital to democracy. And to say that somebody who earns millions a year by arbitrage works that much harder than a middle class wage earner is simply nonsense. We recommend restoring inflation-indexed income tax and inheritance rates to those that were extant from the 1930s to the 1960s, during the golden era of the American middle class. We also recommend that government become, quote, the employer of last resort by taking on public works projects and supporting the arts as it did in that era, and establishing a truly livable minimum wage. I've got a comment that although I wasn't alive quite that long ago, I really like the things that I have seen around here locally. All the beautiful work, for example, in the old Columbia River Gorge Road done by a much more people-oriented and compassionate presidency than we currently have. Okay, well, let me see. I'm going to go ahead and read number five. Building a civilization on liquefied fossils and then thinking it will last forever makes no sense. We must institute a Manhattan Project type of effort to create viable energy resources that are not dependent on fossil fuels. And in the meantime, we must take immediate steps to reduce the use of and preserve our precious stores before they're exhausted. I think probably people who have been paying attention to peak oil and perhaps know more about it than I do would agree with that and could call in with comments as well. Again, the number is 503-231-8187. And I'm going to go along to number six now. And I really like this the wording of this. We are part of nature. The natural world, including our water and air, is our most vital and essential commons, and therefore must be protected from those who would despoil it for short-term profit. As we poison the world, we cause human cancer epidemics and degrade our own quality of life. We, through our representative government, must take immediate steps to protect the commons we share with all other life on planet Earth. And it occurs to me that there are some organizations out there now on who are able to help us with that. At least if you have access to a computer, there are programs like MoveOn.org and True Majority and probably others. Ah, Chris says there's a new call. Is it Nicole?
Yes.
Oh, hi there, Nicole. Welcome and thank you for calling.
Thank you. I wanted to recommend a book that can be downloaded for free on the Internet. It's called The Gangs of America.
Ah.
And it's an excellent kind of historical overview of corporations and how they managed to get individual constitutional rights. Another organization on the Internet is POCLAD, P-O-C-L-A-D,
mm-hmm.
and they do quite a bit of reporting. They've got actually a document, a draft. I think it's a I can't remember what, but it's a draft of a legal document.
Could you give me that name again? I'm going to write it down, and we'll have it here. The website.
Which one? POCLAD?
POCLAD, yeah.
I think it's POCLAD.org, P-O-C-L-A-D. I'm sorry, I don't have papers in front of me. I was just...
That's okay. I'm glad you called in anyway. So there are resources out there if we want to learn more about this.
There are quite a few resources out there. I've been doing a paper, actually, on corporate constitutional rights, and there's a lot of talk. There was actually a small town in New England that got an ordinance passed declaring that corporations are not people and are not persons and cannot.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
That's the first local action like that, isn't it? Or am I wrong about that? Do you know?
Well, there are a number of towns have followed suit and done the same thing, and the town did this in response to, I believe it was a waste company who was dumping, they had a refuse dump, and they were trying to get some ordinances changed because the town residents were bothered and tried to legislate to control some of the activities that the corporation was undertaking. So they tried to sue the town and take it on, and they responded then by passing this ordinance, revoking their ability to claim any kind of rights under the statutes as persons. So I think that that's a great approach, and it might be a hard approach on a bigger level, but at least on a grassroots, this was a municipality. And when you can start with small towns and work your way up, I think that you can start to make some progress. But I think it's not that corporations can't be a beneficial thing, but corporations don't need to have access to rights that were designed to protect individuals.
Exactly.
And that's something I think we need to really work on in this decade.
Yes, well, I'm glad you called it. I'm glad for both points that you made. One is that the corporations can be benevolent. They don't have to behave in this manner. And here goes my short-term memory loss again. The information about the... to start locally and small towns may be the ones who can make the biggest difference because,
you know, at one time corporations had to have corporate charters that were issued by the state. They weren't limited. Many times they weren't limited to maybe 5 years or 20 years or 50 years. Corporate charters were issued for limited purposes. And I think we need to look at changing the laws and getting rid of these general corporate charters that are issued now, which one of the reasons that all of the states went to general corporate charters is because some states started to do it and corporations started to incorporate in those states to get the rights and benefits from those particular states. Mm. But as soon as we start demanding, as individual localities and states, we demand more of corporations that operate within our borders, I think that we need to approach it that way. Right now, nobody demands anything of corporations. And we have to recognize that we have given them the right to operate within the borders of our state. And we, as people who supposedly have a democratic government that we can control, can impose some limits on their ability to do harmful things.
And again, it's starting locally to talk with legislative members in Oregon or in Washington.
Yes.
Yes.
And even the city or in your county or wherever it is that you're operating and you see some corporations coming in and trying to do things that are harmful.
Yes.
Start at a local level.
That's great. Thank you so much. Are you writing this paper for school or for...
Yes.
Well, great. Maybe it's something that you'll be interested in sharing once you're on the other side of the academics.
Well, we'll see how it works out.
Thanks.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Nicole.
Okay.
Goodbye. Anyone else out there, Chris? No? Okay. Well, I am going to go on to the last part of number six. Yes, I'll just repeat it to sort of pick up where we were. We, through our representative government, must take immediate steps to protect the commons we share with all other life on planet Earth. Okay, and following that is number seven, and begins, education is a human right, regardless of station of birth. When Thomas Jefferson founded the University of Virginia, his vision was to provide a free education to everyone, every person interested in and capable of participating. The founders knew that classroom education is a right and not a requirement for life in a democracy. Therefore, university education should be free to all who academically qualify. And primary school education should not be compulsory, but neither should it be provided by for-profit corporations. You know, I'm not so sure I understand what he meant by primary school education should not be compulsory, other than to say that all kids aren't ready at the same time. And for kids who are ready for a certain kind of school as it's generally organized now, you know, it may not be the best thing for young kids, as long as their needs can be met developmentally when they're ready for public school as we know it. So that was number seven, and I'm going to, this is a short one, so I'm going to read it. Number eight, health care is a human right and necessary to sustain freedom in a democracy. America should join every other industrialized democracy in the world by instituting a single-payer health care system. I also am very glad to hear that one. And the idea that that we need our health in order to sustain our freedom is certainly true. We have to have the ability at least to vote. I think we've got another caller. Is that right? Tamara. Okay. Hi there, Tamara.
Hey,
welcome.
Crystal.
Hey there. So, what would you like to add to our discussion tonight?
Well, naturally, I love that stuff about healthcare and education. I would love not to be paying a tuition bill right now.
Uh-huh.
But I missed the beginning of your show, and I was wondering, did you mention a free and unfettered media?
You know, I don't think I did, but that's a good one.
Because of all the things that corporations have done to destroy our democracy, taking over our media has been just a really hideous one.
Yeah.
I think should be undone somehow. I mean, it used to be the FCC had some control over the situation and wouldn't allow a certain number of media outlets. Maybe you were...
You know, we didn't talk about
required.
That. So go ahead, yeah, and talk about this,
like,
please.
Just one entity, person, or corporation could own a media outlet in a given market. And over the past 10 or 20 years, there's been this really radical shift in that. And so you have these conglomerations, not just nationally, but on the local level, that you, where is our news coming from? And
boy,
how corrupt is it? I mean, it's not doing its fourth state work anymore. And that is a huge concern to me.
Yes, it is. And if it weren't, you know, if I just jump here. Oh, and I see that it's 6:30, so I'm going to say that you're listening to KBOO 90.7 in Portland and slightly different in other communities further out. But, yeah, I like KBOO so much because it does give voice to news you're not going to hear other places.
But it's just like this lone voice. I mean, you know, not saying that there aren't other media outlets in Portland that don't do a little bit of good First Amendment work, but KBOO doesn't have the resources of these giant corporations, for starters, but the giant corporations aren't pouring their resources into doing real First Estate First Amendment.
Fourth Estate.
Fourth Estate work. They're not doing that. They're turning our news gathering into trash.
Yeah.
And even you just look at this coal miner story that erupted, and I mean, a tragic story, but what was the first thing that they did after they discovered that these guys, that their 12 of them were dead instead of alive, was sit around and spend I don't know how long of their news cycle trying to figure out why they had the wrong story. And why they have the wrong story is why they're always screwing things up. They just do stuff by the seat of the pants. They don't give their reporters the real resources to do accurate work, and they're all so competitive to try and get the next little itty-bitty pathetic detail that they could be the first to reveal something that, I mean, on a large scale is kind of meaningless.
Well, which sort of makes me think about all of the, in the regular media, all the stories about celebrities. Why do we care? We're made to care if we listen to those particular stations, I think. Or
it's a little bit easier for the average person to absorb a story about Julia Roberts than it is to decide to listen to a story about corporate corruption of Congress. I mean, it's just one thing is just so much easier to digest and go to sleep and sleep soundly at night if all you cared about is what happened to somebody's marriage in Hollywood versus what's happening to your tax dollars in Washington.
Yeah.
One causes insomnia and the other one just makes you go, oh, I wish I had Julia Roberts' chin or whatever whatever her issue is.
And the opiate of the people's is alive and well.
Very true, very true. But healthcare, good education, all these other things. There was one other point, the liquefied fossils thing that you brought up earlier. And I was living down in Southern California for a few years. I wondered, why are they farming in the Imperial Valley when there's no water there except for, you know, the kind of very highly salinic water coming out of the trickle left over from the Colorado River.
I would imagine it would be a lot of salt in that,
Why aren't they farming sunlight? If this, I mean, if you're going to cover the ground with something, why not, you know, have giant fields of solar panels down there collecting energy or wind, whatever. It's just, something I look at that and I think, well, of all the things that we're farming, that is that's the most ridiculous, is growing lettuce in an arid climate.
Yeah, in a place where lettuce was never meant to grow.
Never meant to grow. Anyway, good luck with your show here, Crystal.
Well, thanks a lot, Tamara. I'm very glad you called. And, stay tuned for the rest of it.
I look forward to it.
Okay, thank
Bye.
You. So, Chris, anyone else out there? Not this very moment. So I'm going to go back. Let me see. We did 7 and 8, excuse me, the time is 9:34, and I think we'll go on to steps to Tom Hartman's 10 Steps to Restore Democracy in America. Step number 9, America is not a kingdom, and we don't elect kings. To turn back from the imperial presidency and return the executive branch to its position co-equal with the other two branches of government, we recommend disbanding the primary instrument of presidential power, the Office of Homeland Security, and requiring the president to meet weekly in open and public discussion with all members of Congress, as is done by similar bodies in the United Kingdom and in most other modern democracies. You know, I just got to pause and say how important I think that that concept is. And another place that I believe we can talk to neighbors or friends or co-workers or people you meet on the bus or wherever about what's happened to the Office of Presidency. How has it changed from its original meaning? And I like the idea that Tom Hartman, I think, kind of nails it when he says that we need to disband the primary instrument of presidential power, which is the Office of Homeland Security. So more transparency is what we need. I'm going to look in at Chris. Nobody there right now. Okay. Well, you're going to get all 10 of these in just a little over half an hour. So we really do need some of you to call in with more comments. I thank the callers who've called in already. It's been really enjoyable hearing what you're thinking out there. And if you don't agree with some of this stuff, please call in too. Okay, I'm going to give the number once more. 503-231-8187. And hi, Emily, you're on the air.
Hi. I was really interested in your comment about education. I'm actually interested in everything that you're talking about.
Okay, Emily, we're having a little hard time hearing you. So if you can, speak up as loudly as possible, because I want to hear that, what you have to say.
Certainly. I was just saying that I'm very interested in every one of your topics tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I hear you a little better. Chris, how's that going? I think you're doing okay, but our engineer says you got to talk even louder, please.
Okay, I'll do. This is as loud as I can go.
Well, I can hear you, so let's hope the listeners can, too. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I hope they can, because I have a couple of great quotes in regard to education. And one of them is by Carl Rogers, and it says, if we value independence, if we are disturbed by the growing conformity of knowledge, of values, of attitudes, which our present system induces, then we may wish to set up conditions of learning which make for uniqueness, for self-direction, and for self-initiated learning. And then I just had one other quote from Paulo Freire.
Yes, please. Liking this quote. Go ahead.
Sure. This one is from his book called Pedagogy of Freedom, Ethics, Democracy, and Civic Courage. And he said, the world of culture is where freedom, choice, decision, and possibility are only possible because they can also be denied, despised, or refused. For this reason, the education of women and men, and I would add children, mm-hmm. can never be purely instrumental. It must also be ethical. It is essential to insist on it because as unfinished beings, conscious of our unfinishedness, we are capable of options and decisions which may not be ethical. And I guess I would follow that up with a lot of the systems of education that are in place right now, particularly in the public system.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a little bit critical of, not because of any reason that the people who are participating in them are at fault or anything like of that nature,
mm-hmm.
but just to say that the curriculum is constantly changing. The demands placed upon teachers make it such that they're teaching to a standard, a test standard, rather than basing their curriculum on the developmental needs of these developing human beings.
Oh, yes.
Spirit.
I agree with you. It would make my head spin to be a teacher right now.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with child development as we know what is necessary for child development. Are you a teacher yourself?
I am. I am a Montessori-trained teacher, actually.
Ah.
And for me personally, I have found that to be very valuable because it's based on the scientific study of human development, and it's been based on a body of scientific knowledge that's been gathered over 100 years and has the largest sample of population of children studied, it's children all over the world, and she found some things that were common to children at different ages in their lives, and it's replicable. It's something that we find that if we set up this environment for learning, that these children are motivated to develop their own sense of independence, that they're very interested in teaching themselves and learning wonderful things. So I found it really a wonderful thing to be a part of.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, thank you so much for calling. I appreciate hearing something from someone in the field of education. We're going to go to our next caller now, so I'll say thank you. And it's Jay. Welcome. Yes, glad to have you there.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Listen, whether it's Montessori or No Child Left Behind or whatever type of system, if we would just look at it earnestly and straightforward, we would know that we could put together a think tank of the very best minds of people in finance and education and social engineering to come up with a system that would make legislation that would assure that there was one education system that's sponsored by the taxpayers' money, all of the taxpayers, not some of them, those in the very lowest echelons of earnings and those in the very highest, that all of these funds were absolutely equally distributed throughout the education system. What does this mean? This means that not one school or not one child has any kind of educational resource that each and every other child does not have access to, equal access to. And if enough energy was invested in a plan such as this, only a small amount that is invested in the plan that we have now, which allows for discrimination and classification, there wouldn't be any problem with education. All of the most sincere and the most ethical people would come up with the best system that they thought was good for their children, and all of the resources would be extracted from the same pool.
You know, I realize as I listen to you that this is a big subject, and I know we've got a couple of callers waiting in online, but would you expand just a little bit more on what you've said so I could be sure that I understand?
So that, in other words, every child has
an opportunity. Excuse me, could you turn your radio down, too, Chris asks.
Okay,
thanks.
One second. Sorry, I was far away.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, it's just that there's legislation passed to assure that the quality of education that you get and the quality of resources that are made available to you is not dependent upon how much money you earn.
Okay.
You know, in other words, if you live in Brookline, you have the same resources, whether they are human or otherwise, as the child in East L.A.
Mm-hmm.
Or Portland.
Or perhaps a small town like Ulysses, Kansas.
Uh-huh. Right. Exactly. No, there's no difference.
Mm-hmm.
And it's allotted according to this. There's a formula that's worked out by the very best minds, you know. How much money is allotted for what size population, depending upon what the funds are for that year.
Mm-hmm. Well, I certainly think that would be a very important part of the education plan. I do know from having a background in education that we're all so unique, and not everyone is going to be ready at the same time or learn at the same pace.
Exactly, or even want to pursue the same course of study.
That's right.
I'm going to go now.
Okay, thanks so much for calling. I appreciate you. Yes, we have someone who's been waiting for a bit. Is it Marty?
Yes, it is.
Hi there. Welcome.
Hi.
And please talk to us about...
Well, I liked what the last caller had to say, and you know, while I was listening to this, I've actually missed some of the program because my son and his wife came over, and he brought up, and I think this is a good point, is, you know, it's all well and good to, you know, to say something needs to be done, but what is that something that needs to be done? And mm-hmm. what I liked about what the last caller said is that he had, you know, at least an idea, okay, we get the best minds together and we think about what we really research this and think it through and decide what needs to be done. But in reference to the whole corporate problem with what corporations are doing these days, that some corporations are doing anyway, you know, I think what Tom has expressed in the 10 points that he brings up reflect his values. And until the similar values, and I don't share all of his values, but until similar values are esteemed by our population as a whole, we are not going to make any progress in that direction. And, you know, I think we are seeing now, you know, with the Abramoff thing and people, you know, being like Ken Lay and the whole...
the corruption.
The corruption, yeah. And the people who are losing face and spending time in jail because of what they've done, that I think is good. And how do you get a new culture? How do you get a new value system? Because right now it seems that what I heard somebody say recently that it's not fair. Right now we're taxing capital gains at a very low rate, and if the president has his way, we will not tax them at all. And what I heard somebody say is that, you know, if a fellow happens to be, you know, graduated from college and go to work for Lucent, he's out of work. He's out of luck. He has no pension. He has no nothing. He's, you know, looking for a job. But if a fellow with the same degree, same, or a woman with the same skill sets went to work for Microsoft or recently for Google, they would be millionaires with the same... with the same thing. That's just pretty much a matter of luck. Those gains that the people make on that regard, they should look at themselves as being extremely fortunate and share that wealth with the people who are using Google and buying Microsoft products. You know, it's an interesting subject, and I think many of us will agree that a lot of things need to be done, but we kind of have to focus on what can be done and what needs to be done first. And I don't know what that is, but I know that I'm not liking a lot of what I see going on right now, and I guess I'll stay tuned.
Well, you know, Marty, what some callers in the beginning talked about and I thought was important is, you know, of those things that you believe in and believe in fervently and things that are not currently happening in our government, you know, where do you start? And one idea that I heard more than once was, you talk to your friends, you talk to your family, your grown children, or your people in the workplace. You talk to neighbors, people that are pretty much like you, that aren't really a whole lot different, and you express what you believe to them. I mean, it's easy to start with people that. To start the conversations with people you know somewhat, than to
Oftentimes you'll find yourself preaching to the choir, but you know, we have to start someplace.
You've got to start someplace. That's right. And you know, I on the subject. Well, would you be interested in expressing, or can you remember which of these that you really didn't agree with? You want to be?
Oh, actually, I can't because.
Okay.
I have been distracted during the program, so I wasn't able to catch them all. But,
that's okay.
I mean, I just know, generally speaking, that I would probably find things in there that I would not personally support. I think I support a lot of the concepts and thinking behind it, but not in all the particulars.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, a lot of it is that you know, there just isn't the the momentum to carry forward those ideas right now, and
not unless we can do it one person at a time. That's sure, and not unless we can write or use some of those internet websites to send emails to our our senators and congresspeople and let them know this is another voice. I'm a taxpayer, I'm a voter, and I want you to know that this is what I believe. And, you know, as I say that, I realize, boy, you know, for me who doesn't use a computer very much, that sounds hard, also sounds a little boring, but at least I've got the power of my voice, and I can give it, aim some of it at some of the congresspeople.
Right.
Well, thank you very much for calling in. I appreciate your call.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've got about 10 minutes left. I could go with an amusing piece, CD that I've got, or no, I think I'm going to go the other way. This is an article I got from Common Dreams by Holly Sklar, and it was published December 29th, called American Road Leads Off a Cliff. And I like the way she writes. The American dream doesn't need to go on a diet in the new year. It's been shrinking for years. And she's talking about how, again, the middle class, which once existed, is pretty much leaking away. So I will go on to read a couple of paragraphs of this, and hopefully people, you're still listening out there, and if you want to call in, it's 503-281-8187. Okay, it says, we are becoming a nation of Scrooge Marts and outsources with an increasingly low-wage workforce instead of a growing middle class. Even two-paycheck households are struggling to afford a house, college, health care, and or retirement. The American dream is becoming the American pipe dream. And here's a quote. The vast majority of American workers, 70%, think, quote, the American dream, unquote, has been or will be harder for them to financially achieve than it was for their parents' generation. This is according to the Principal Financial Well-Being Index, and as reported by Holly Sklar. Median household income has fallen an unprecedented 5 years in a row. It would be even lower if not for increased household work hours. Americans work over 200 hours more a year on average than workers in other rich industrialized countries. I'll read one more paragraph and hope that some of you are getting ready to call in. We are breaking records we don't want to break. Record numbers of Americans have no health insurance. The share of national income going to wages and salaries is the lowest since 1929. Middle-class households are a medical crisis, an outsourced job, or a busted pension away from bankruptcy. And I'll continue on. I read that one. The congressional majority voted the biggest cut in history to the student loan program at a time when college is more important and more expensive than ever. Public college tuition has risen even faster than private tuition, jumping 54% over the last decade, adjusted for inflation. I know that a previous caller tonight was going to school, and we didn't get into this, but I bet you that the college, the money I paid for college tuition when I was that age is probably, well, 10 times what it is today. And I had to take out loans for mine. So, any of you callers out there? Oh, we don't have much time left. We don't have much time left. It's about 6:54. So, perhaps what we should do, Chris, is I'm going to read something for the station in a minute. But maybe we should go out with an amusing piece of music from Holy Stolen Empire, and it's Chandler and Ann Feeney, and it's called The 21st Century Skid Row Man. But before you cue it up, Chris, shall I go ahead and read about our underwriters? Okay. I wanted to let everyone listening tonight know that that Bread and Roses has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from, in other words, Women's Books and Resources. And there are local nonprofit feminist bookstore and resource center offering community space, events, gifts, tools for the revolution, a comprehensive collection of women's writings, and more. Located at 3734 Southeast Hawthorne and on the web at inotherwords.org. Well, I want to thank you for listening tonight. I'm Crystal Leedy and Chris DeMaria. Ooh, I'm sorry, I blew your last name. DeMaria, am I saying it right? Close enough, she says. Oh, anyway, we've been your host and engineer. And the piece that we're going to hear now is from Ann Feeney and Chandler, The Holy Stolen Empire. Good night.
How can I miss you when you won't go away? Keep telling you day after day.
The 20th century's been hanging around my house, sleeping on my couch, puttering around my living room in his socks like Ozzy Osbourne. Burnout, still an oil junkie, nothing to say, reliving his past glory, small dogs soiling the carpet.
But you don't listen, you always stay and stay well. How can I miss you when you won't go away?
But then the 21st century flew aboard four airplanes right into my living room, and the pundits claimed that we had changed. But what I want to know is just how is it that we have changed?
Well, if you don't love it, leave it. Let this song that I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down this country, boy, you're walking on the fighting side of me.
Remember when all the pundits claimed that we Americans would never go back to our reality show lies? That the endless imagery of the Twin Towers would show us that reality itself was a good enough show? And that Survivor would not survive? And there would be an end to shows like American Idol, Real World, and Who Wants to Marry a Republican? We have not changed.
And forever in peace may it wait.
Even the American flags that once flew tattered on the antennae of gas guzzlers have finally blown threadbare.
It's the empire of the land I love.
New ones are consigned to the half-off bin at Walmart.
The home of the free and
so-called
free.
Reality shows that depict a reality that I cannot hallucinate even during my drug days are more popular than an ecstasy and Viagra cocktail in a techno dance club. But there was that moment that we all keep reliving when the 20th century had indeed left the house. And in that moment, I believed that the phoenix that we all knew would rise from the ashes of the Twin Towers might turn out to be a dove.
Where there's never a ghost or a friend.
But then we saw little W standing on the White House lawn, standing in front of a giant George Foreman grill, spatula in hand, serving up filet of dove and Dove McNuggets.
Should old acquaintance be forgot, keep your eye on the grand old flag.
In that moment, I knew that the 20th century had not left for good. No, Ozzy Osbourne had just stepped out for a pack of cigarettes, and he was back in my living room. And he plops down on my couch, slamming an oil can down on the table, shouting, USA, USA, as the bombs begin to fall.
So long, Mom, I'm off to get Saddam, so don't wait up for me.
And he flops on a red, white, and blue Patriots jersey, and he's slamming that oil can down on the table, and he's shouting, USA, USA, as the bombs continue to fall.
I'm a Yankee Doodle Dandy.
And I think back to 9/11.
Yankee
and the pundits asking for a moment of silence. Every time I see the bombs falling, every time I hear the chants of USA, USA, I wish someone would ask for another moment of silence. A year of silence. A millennium of silence.